We left off yesterday with the idea that the Shekhinah did not rest in the second Beis HaMikdash because the Shekhinah only rests by Ohal HaShem. The Shekhinah only rests on the Beis HaMikdash, on the temple that's built solely by the Jewish people. But the second Beis HaMikdash, which was built in conjunction with the Persian, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shekhinah did not rest within that Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says there was a baskol, there was a heavenly voice that came out, there were certain manifestations of the divine, but the Shekhinah itself did not rest there. So the Gemara says, Upar soy minolon demiefes kasu. So they both say, interestingly enough, so this all, the Gemara understands that the Persians were the descendants of Yefes. So the Gemara is going to go through a little bit of genealogical discussion. So how do we know that the Persians are the descendants of Yefes? Because the Pasuk says, Bnei Yefes, Gomer u'magog u'madai v'yavan v'tuval u'meshech v'tiras. So these are all the descendants of Yefes. So the Gemara darshins, u'meshech v'tiras, Gomer. What's Gomer? Zeger mamia. So we'll say, again, we're not going to spend too much time on this, although there's a lot of interesting discussions over here to see what nations emanated from each of these ancient biblical families. So the Gemara says, Gomer, that's Germania. Magog, Zekandia. Madai, Zu, Macedonia. And again, obviously some of these names like Germania, the Gemara understands is ancient Germania. So again, Candia is not Canada. Right? It's not Canada. Right? What comes from Canada? I'm saying, you know. So, Macedonia. So interesting to see. Just see, again, we're not going to spend time on it today, but when you chaz the daf, you'll see it. Yavan Kemashma. Oh, Yavan is Greece, obviously. Tuval Ze Beis Onaiki. Mashach Zu Musia. Tiras. What's Tiras? So the Gemara says, Pligi ba Rabbi Simon v'Rabbanon. So Rabbi Simon and the rabbis argued about it. Va'amrila Rabbi Simon v'Rabbanon. Others say it wasn't Rabbi Simon, but instead it was Rabbi Simon. Chad Amar Zu Beis Taraiki. One says that this is Beis Taraiki. V'chad Amar Zu Paras. And one said that this is Paras. So we'll say again, you see over here, it's just all the Gemara is just trying to point out is the link between Paras and Yavan. Okay? Tani Rav Yosef, Tiras zu Paras. And Rav Yosef says elsewhere that Tiras in fact is Paras. So the Gemara says, Safta Ra'ama b'Saftacha. Now this is part of the Pasuk over here. What's Safta Ra'ama and Saftacha? Tani Rav Yosef, Sakistan Gavaisa. The Sakistan Braisa. This refers to literally Sakistan Gavaisa is inner Sakistan and Sakistan Braisa is outer Sakistan. The Parsi between inner Sakistan and outer Sakistan is 100 parsos. The Hekefa and the circumference of outer Sakistan is Alpha Parsi, is 1,000 parsos. Okay? Vatihi Rashis Mamlachto Bavel. So we'll say here. The Gemara is quoting from the Pasuk in Bereishis, talking about Nimrod. So the Gemara says that the Vati Reishis Mamlachto Babel. One second, I'm getting the reverberation. Vatihi Reishis Mamlachto Bavel. So again, here the quoting the pasuk. Vatihi Reishis Mamlachto Bavel ve'erech ve'akad ve'kalnei ve'eretz shinar. So that's the whole pasuk. So the Gemara says Bavel kemashma. So the Gemara is trying to analyze where are all of these places. So Bavel kemashma. Bavel is what it is, meaning kemashma. It's Bavel erech zu urichos ve'echad zu bischar zu bischar kalna zanofer. Zenofer Nimfi. Min ha'aretz ahi yatsa Ashur. From this land, Ashur came out. Tani Rav Yosef, Ashur ze Silak. Ashur is Silak. Vayiven es Ninveh ve'es Rechobos ir ve'kalach ve'es kalach. So again, here now the Gemara is quoting from the Pasuk. Also in Bereishis. Just talking about all the different places he built. He built Ninveh, Rechobos ir and kalach. So the Gemara says, Ninveh kemashmo. Ninveh is Ninveh. Rechovos ir. What's Rechovos ir? Zu Pras de Mishan. This refers to Pras of Mishan. Klach, I guess there are different cities of Pras. Klach, Zupras Diborsif. What's Klach? That's Pras Borsif. Ve'es Resen Bein Ninveh, Ubein Klach, Hi Ha'ir Hagdola, Resen Zu Aktisfon. So Resen is Aktisfon. Hi Ha'ir Hagdola, what does it mean that it was a great city? Eini Yodea in Ninveh Ha'ir Hagdola, Im Resen Ha'ir Hagdola. Is Ninveh the great city that's being mentioned? Or is Resen the great city that's being mentioned? Kishu Omer, when the Pasuk says, Ninveh Ha'isa Ir Gedola Le'lokim, Mahalach Shlosha Samim. But when the Pasuk in Yonah says that Nineveh was a great city, a 3 days journey, or a great city to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a 3 days journey, Havi Omer, Nineveh hi ha'ir ha'gedola. Oh, it's apparently clear that Nineveh is the Lord, that Nineveh is the great city referenced in the Pasuk. So we'll say all the Gemara is doing is just going through all of these different places. And I guess for Chazal, when they identify these particular lands, I guess these definitions or these identifications were relevant for them. So the Gemara goes back to the Gemara says, Tana, Achiman, so actually the most of these actually interesting. V'shem Achiman, Shishai V'talmai, Yelidei Ha'anak. See, here the Pasuk is talking about in Bamidbar, the Torah says, Vayalu Banegev, Vayavo Ad Chevron. So this is talking about, again, by the Meraglim. When they come into Eretz Yisrael, they go to Hebron, and when they get to Hebron, they come to the place of Achiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, Yilidei Ha'anak, literally the offspring of the giants. So the Gemara goes through and identifies the significance of each of these names. So the Gemara says, what's the significance of each of these names? So Tana Achiman, Miyuman, Sheba Achim. Why was he called Achiman? Achiman means Miyuman. Miyuman means he was the most powerful of his brothers. Sheshai, Shemesim Esa'aretz Kishechisos. Sheshai, because ultimately when he would walk, he would destroy the earth. Meaning he was so big and so powerful that literally just by walking, he would level destruction upon the earth. Talmai, Shemesim Esa'aretz Telamim Telamim. That ultimately he made the earth. Tlam means furrows. That when he would take his footsteps, he would create furrows in the earth. Now, obviously, this could be a little bit of hyperbole over here, just talking about how large and how powerful these particular individuals were. Dover Acher, another possibility. Achiman, what is Achiman? Achiman Bana Anas. Sorry, so what's the place here? Achiman built Anas. Sheshai Bun. Do you hear the reverberation on this? I'm sorry about saying what's happening here. I muted, shuts the whole thing off. Alright, try once more. Drink your coffee for 2 minutes. Yeah. Okay, sorry, I was saying, let's go back there. So the Gemara says the following. So Shishai Bana Alash, first wide line, Talmai Bana Talbush, Yilidei Ha'anak. So these are all the different cities that they built. Yilidei Ha'anak. Well, so listen to this. What does it mean now? We translate Yilidei Ha'anak as offspring of the giants. But the Gemara gives a different understanding also. Shema'anikin Hachama Bikomasan. That when they would stand, it would have the appearance that they were wearing the sun as a necklace. That's how large they were. Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Amar Rabbi. Asida Romi Shetipo Biad Paras. So Rabbi said that Rome will fall into the hands of Persia. Shene Emar, this is talking about Bosai in the Messianic era. Shene Emar, now Bosai, this has to do, we're not going to get too into this today, this notion of Rome falling into the hands of Persia when Rome is gone and Persia is gone, has to do with this idea that the war of Gog and Magog will be this ultimate war between all of the nations. And as such, again, all of these nations have morphed into other present-day nations. So there's some offspring of Persia, there's some offspring of Rome. So the Gemara says that Rome will ultimately fall in the hands of Persia. Shne'emar, lochin shimu atzas Hashem al yoshvei tema, im lo yisachvum si'irei hatzom, Yosim Alehem Nohim. Shabbos, like the pasuk over here, the Gemara is quoting, is a pasuk from Yirmiyahu, and Yirmiyahu says, "Therefore, hear the counsel of God that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has said about Edom. Edom, of course, is Rome. If the young sheep will not decimate them. So according to this pasuk in Yirmiyahu, the young sheep, which the Gemara seems to be understanding as a reference to Persia, will decimate Edom, which is Rome. So the Gemara says, Maskif l'Rabba bar Ula, my mashma dahait tziri atzon parasu. How do you know that the young sheep refers to Persia? Dichsiv, because the pasuk says, again here now quoting the pasuk from Daniel, ha'ayul asher isa bal hakranayim. Malchei Madai Uparas. Because ultimately it says that the ram that you saw that had horns is representative of the kings of Madai and Paras. I ve'imo Yavan. So we'll say all the Gemara saying over here is therefore you see from there this reference of the ram sheep reference to the kings of Persian media, Persia in this case. Ve'imo Yavan. I say that it refers to Greece. Because the Pasuk says, the young he-goat, that refers to the king of Yavan, the king of Greece. So you see that Greece is also compared to a sheep. So the Gemara says, Ki salik rav chaviva bar surmaki, amra kamei dahumi rabbanon, amrle, man delo yoda perushe, kamosif tiyufta l'rebi. So also, listen to this. When Rav Chaviva bar Sumki come, he said this before the rabbis, and the rabbi said to him, someone who doesn't know the meaning of psukim in the Torah should be posing a kasha to Rebbe. My tziriatzon, what is it? What does tziriatzon, the young of the sheep, mean? Zutra da'achuhi. It refers to the youngest of the brothers. And also, apparently, the youngest of the brothers refers to Persia. Refers to Persia. The tiny Rav Yosef, tiras zuparas. Because as Rav Yosef said before, Tiras is Paras. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda, Berabbi Eloi, Asida Romi Shetipo Biad Paras. Rome will fall into the hands of Persia. Kavachomer, and it's Kavachomer, what's the Kavachomer? Uma Mikdash Rishon, Shebina Uhu B'nei Shein, V'hirchi Vuhu Kastim, Naflu Kastim Biad Paras. And so we'll say, listen to this. When it came to the first Beis HaMikdash that was built by the sons of Shem, that's us, right? First Beis HaMikdash was built by Shlomo HaMelech. And what happened? And it was destroyed by the Kastim. The Kastim over here is Nebuchadnezzar. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babel, but Babel was really the Chaldean Empire. So when it comes to the first Beis HaMikdash that was built by the sons of Shem and ultimately destroyed by the Kastim, Naflu Kastim Biad Parsim, and the Kastim, the Babylonians, fell into the hands of the Parsim, of the Persians. So we'll say, remember, just the evolution of the kingdoms was that Babel was the Chaldeans, the Kastim. Kastims were conquered by the Persians. Persians ultimately merged with the Medians, Persian-Median Empire. Persian-Median Empire is ultimately swallowed up by Greece, and Greece is swallowed up by Rome. So that's the progression over here. So the Gemara says that the first Beis HaMikdash that was built by us, by the sons of Shem, and what happens? It was destroyed by the Kastim, and Naflu Kastim Biad Parsim, and the Kastim fell into the hands of the Persians. Mikdash Sheni Shebanu Parsim Vechrivu Romim. So the second Beis HaMikdash was built by the Persians, which we said at the top of the daf already, and was destroyed by the Romans. Eino din sheyiplu Romim biad Parsim. So also this is interesting. So if the ones who built the first temple fell into the hands of the ones who destroyed it, then the ones who built the second temple will fall into the hands of the one who destroyed it. Right? So the Persians, so Jews built the first temple, fell into the hands of the Persians who destroyed it. Persians built the second temple, fall into the hands of Rome who destroyed it. Amarav, asida paras shetipo biad Romi. Persia will ultimately fall into the hands of Rome. Omurli Rav Kana v'Ravasi l'Rav Benuyeh Biyad Siturei. Does it make sense that those who built it will fall into the hands of those who destroy it? So also what the Gemara is bothered by over here is that as difficult as Persia was at times, the Persian Empire is responsible for building the second temple. As I said yesterday, it was Koresh, it was Cyrus who ultimately allowed for the building of the second temple. Now then I will say, but remember, he also funded it. We didn't have money to build the second temple. It was outside donations. He funded it. So why would the people who ultimately built the second Beis HaMikdash fall into the hands of those who destroyed it? Amar Luhu in Gzeras Melachi. So I said the Gemara is a very interesting answer. Yes, the ones who built the temple will ultimately fall into the hands of those who destroyed it. Why? Because that's the Gzera. That is the decree of the king. Ike da Amri, there are those who say, Amarle inhu nami hakasasri bekinishta. So the Gemara says, well, you know what? The Persians are not so innocent themselves, because as much as the Persians built the Beis Hamikdash, they destroyed many shuls. Bosei, which means that don't think the look. The, it was a good moment in history where King Cyrus allowed us to go and build the second Beis Hamikdash and help to fund it. But the Persians persecuted the Jews much as well. So the notion that they will have to pay for their crimes by falling into the hands of the Roman is not lacking of divine justice. Tanya Miachir writes that supports this. Asida paras shetipol biad Romi. Persia will ultimately fall into the hands of Rome. Number one, Chada, this Sastri Bekinishta. Number one, because they themselves destroyed many shuls. Va'od Gziras Melechu. And furthermore, it's simply the decree of the king, Sheyiplu Bonin Biyat Sosrin. So we'll say that's the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The will of God is that God wants the builders to fall into the hands of the destroyers. Okay, it doesn't make sense to us. Guess what? Gziras Melech, it doesn't have to make sense. That's the decree of the king. Dam Rabbi Yehuda Marav. Ein ben David ba, at shetif shot malchus Romi harish b'cholam. So this is amazing that David HaMelech will not in ben David. Excuse me, Mashiach ben David is Mashiach. Mashiach won't come until the monarchy, until the malchus of Romi, the malchus of Rome, extends over the entire globe. Tisha chadashim for a full 9 months. Shenemar lochin yitnei. I will say again, you just understand. So these statements are really awesome. Like we saw before, that's one of the dominant offspring ultimately of Yefes. Remember, Yefes is also the father of Greece, the father of Rome, was Germania. You know, we think about historically what Germany was. In Germania, we know present-day Germany is certainly some offspring of Germania. We'll see the Gemara Maseches Megillah brings down that Germania is like an ox with a ring in its nose. And if you release the ring from its nose, it could destroy the entire world. That's the Gemara says about Germania. It's quite dramatic. So the Gemara says over here that Mashiach will not come until the Roman Malchus Romi, rules over the world for 9 months. Shene Emar, Lachin Yitneim, he's quoting over here the pasuk from Micha. Lachin Yitneim, Ad Eis Yoleda Yalada, the Yeser Echav Yeshuvan Al Bnei Yisrael. So the Gemara Dashans over here is, Lachin Yitne Ad Eis Yolada, I will place them until the time of birth, and then the rest of the brethren will join the Jewish people. So we'll say what this is a reference to is the Messianic era. And what it's saying over here is that Rome will have the ability to rule over the world ad eis lida, for the amount of time of birth. So the Gemara understands that from that perspective, in the pre-Messianic era, before Mashiach comes, I don't know if this is Gog and Magog or something else, Rome will rule over the world for 9 months, and during that time will be a time of great suffering, but it will also result in a regrouping of the Jewish people. Tanu Rabban. So we'll say that concludes the Agada Tov for now. So now the Gemara goes back to our sugya. So we'll say, remember, we left off before we got, the reason, how did we get into all this? We got into all this because we were discussing yesterday about the Parhedrin. So this sparked our, but remember, let's go back for just a moment. The Lishka, the chamber in which the coin was sequestered was called the Lishka Parhedrin. Remember, originally it was called what? Balvatin, right? The Lishkas Balvatin, the Lishka of the nobleman. But then once again, remember that the Kuna Gidola became a bought office where there was such a high turnover, it became more like it became a joke. So it became known as the chamber of the Parhedrin. The Parhedrin were the servants of the king that had turnover every single year. So now the Gemara is going to talk a little bit about the Lishkas Parhedrin. So the Gemara says, so we'll say now we're going to get into a very interesting halachic sugya, which actually is going to teach us a lot regarding Hilchos Mezuzah. So the Gemara says all of the chambers in the Beis HaMikdash did not have a mezuzah. Now, why didn't they have a mezuzah, I'm saying? Because remember, a mezuzah is a din in a domicile. A mezuzah is a din in a place where you live. The Beis HaMikdash was not a it was a divine domicile, but because again people didn't live there, the Maase again, they didn't have to have a mezuzah on the doors of the Beis HaMikdash. So kol lishkos, all the chambers in the Beis HaMikdash, lo hayu la mezuzah chutz midishkas parhedrin, with one exception, with the parhedrin chamber. Why? Shahaya ba beis dira the kohen gadol, because I will say again, the parhedrin was a domicile. The kohen gadol lived there, granted only 7 days a year, but la Maase, he still lived there. Amr Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says, one second. V'halo kama lishkos hayiba mikdash shahaya lahen. Four other chambers for living purposes in the temple. They did not have mezuzos. Look at Rashi for a moment, just for just a moment, we'll say. The Gemara says over here, v'halo kama lishkos hayu l'shomrei habayis. I will say, remember, there were people who lived in the Beis HaMikdash, lived in the Beis HaMikdash. See, says over here, Shomri Abayis, there was like an honor guard by the Beis HaMikdash. So the honor guard obviously had to go ahead and stay in the Beis HaMikdash. But the truth is, Rabbi Yosef, again, remember, there were also Levim were in the Beis HaMikdash, there were Kohanim, although we'll see where the Kohanim slept in the Beis HaMikdash. It is actually a fascinating thing. So right now, we'll just go with the idea, Shomri Abayis. There was an honor guard. So the honor guard had to sleep there at shifts. They had to sleep somewhere. So they presumably slept in chambers as well. And yet what? What Rabbi Huda is saying over here is, I don't understand. If you tell me Lishkas Parhedrin needs a mezuzah because it's a domicile, there must have been other chambers that served as a residence as well. And yet they didn't have mezuzahs. Elo Lishkas Parhedrin Gezerah Haisa. Rather, says Rabbi Huda, no. Rabbi Huda agrees with the Tanna Kamma that there was a mezuzah on Lishkas Parhedrin, but rather, again, he says it was for a totally different reason. It wasn't because it's a domicile, because, again, living there for 7 days does not make it into a domicile. Why did it have a mezuzah? Rabbi Yehuda says it's a gzeira. So look at Rashi just a moment. Gzeira haisa. Lekamei mefarish gzeira shemayomru koin gadol beveis ha'asrun muchavosh. So we'll see as later on, Rabbi Yehuda was concerned about the following, that people are going to see the Kohen Gadol sequestered, removed from his home and sequestered in this room. What are they going to think? They're going to think he's incarcerated. So what do? They put a mezuzah on the door to show the people that this is not an incarceration. It's what? It's a sequestration preparation. So apparently having the mezuzah there made it look like a domicile, so people should not think he's incarcerated. By the way, Rabosai is an interesting shayla. We'll talk about this tomorrow in terms of whether or not you should put up a mezuzah in jail. Let's say a person, Nebuchadnezzar, is in jail. Let's say it's a Jewish jail. So what do you do? Is a person obligated, is an inmate obligated to put up a mezuzah in his cell? So we'll talk about that. But the Gemara says over here, so we'll say, here's what we have. Both Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanon agree that whereas the other chambers in the Beis HaMikdash did not have a mezuzah, the Lishkas Parhedrin did. According to the Tanna Kamma, it's because it was a domicile, it was a residence, it had to have a mezuzah. Rabbi Yehuda says it can't be about residence, because if it's about residence, then there are other chambers that what? Should have had a mezuzah as well. So why don't we put a mezuzah up in the Beis HaMikdash on the Lishkas Parhedrin? So that shouldn't look like a jail cell. It should look like a domicile. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, my time with Rabbi Yehuda, what's Rabbi Yehuda's logic? Amarava Kasav Rabbi Yehuda, Kobayas She'eno Asri Limosacham Limosagisham, Eno Bayas, because Rabbi Yehuda holds literally that any home that is not made for winter use and summer use is not a home. But I will say, what does that mean? That Rabbi Huda says, look at Rashi for just a moment. Eino bayis v'gabei mezuzah bo'inon bayis choshev. So we'll say, according to Rabbi Huda, in order to be chayved a mezuzah, it's not just enough to be a damas, it's a bayis choshev. What's a bayis choshev? A bayis choshev is a home that you live in continuously. So for example, Rabbi Huda says, if you had a home that you only one home you lived in the summer, and one home you lived in the winter, Rabbi Huda would say you're not chayiv for mezuzah in those circumstances. Why? Because you don't have continuous residence in those homes. We don't pass in that way. But that's Rabbi Huda's position. So the Gemara says, my time, Rabbi Huda, okay, eino bayis. Eisvei abaye. So abaye says, I v'haksiv, but it says, v'hikesi es beis achoref, al beis hakayit. I, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is in Amos. I will destroy the winter home, and I will destroy the summer home. So we'll say, what do you see from here? That even a home that you only live in seasonally is still what? No. Is still called a home, and therefore should be chayiv in mezuzah. So Rabbi Yehuda will respond, no. Amarlei, bayis choref u bayis karetz ikri. Bayis stama lo ikri. Rabbi Yehuda said, the only thing you're chayiv in mezuzah for is what? Is a stam home. But something that's called the winter home, something that's called the summer home, that's not chayiv in mezuzah for. So Rabbi Yehuda said, this makes sense now. This is why Rabbi Yehuda will say that the Lishkas Parhedrin does not require mezuzah, even though the Kohen is going to live there for 7 days, because you need continuous residence in order to be chayiv in mezuzah. Es ve'abayi. Sarai raises the kash. Also, listen to this case. Sukkah sachag bechag. What about sukkah? So the sukkah on a sukkah on Yom Tov. Rabbi Yehuda says you have to put up a mezuzah. Interesting. It's put up a mezuzah. And bechacham poch, and bechacham say you don't have to put up a mezuzah. V'tani Allah, Rabbi Yehuda mechayiv. Furthermore, not only that, but Rabbi Yehuda also says, therefore, a sukkah mechayiv be'iriv, u mechayiv be'mezuzah, u b'meiser. Listen to this from both sides. Rabbi Yehuda says that with your sukkah, you're chayvin mitzvah. So like we said before, you're chayvin eruv. What does eruv mean? Let's go back to our eruvin days. That if I have my sukkah in a courtyard with other homes, well, so let's say I live in courtyard A, but I set up my sukkah in courtyard B. So what does Rabbi Yehuda say? For the eruv, for the sheet, what he calls the sheet, right? The eruv chatzeros, I have to participate in the eruv, even though what? I don't have an actual home there. All I have is a sukkah. So I have to put a mezuzah on the sukkah. I have to participate in the eruv. Not only that, ube meiser. Rabbi says it's very interesting. What does it mean, meiser? So we'll see. Meiser means like this. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rabbi Yehuda mechayiv. Rashi says le'inyan meiser. Dekayim alon in ha'tevel mischayiv b'meiser. Melechom inu achila sarai. Ad sheyira pnei abayis. Shnei Rabbi Yehuda Shemaz. Well, so listen to this. Very interesting halacha when it comes to meiser. That you are, a food is only obligated in meiser when it actually enters into the home. Now that's learned out of a pasuk that says by vidui meiser, when a person confesses that he's given all of his tithes, so it says bi'arti hakodesh min habayis. Literally, I have rid the house of all tithing items. So the Gemara learns out from there that you only chayiv meiser once you bring the items through the front door of the house, which means practically, by the way, that before you go ahead and you bring the food through the house, you could eat what's called an achilas arai. You could eat a snack from the produce without having to tithe it. So Rabbi Yehuda says that if you bring your produce through the front door of your sukkah, that's like bringing it into your bayis, and therefore it's going to be chayiv in trumos and maizos. So we'll say the clear theme is what? Rabbi Yehuda holds that the sukkah is a real home. Therefore, it's going to be chayiv in mezuzah. Therefore, if you have it in a chatz, you have to participate in the eruv chatzeros. And if you bring your mice, if you bring your produce through it, you're going to have to go out and tithe it. So it says the Gemara, v'chitim midrabanan. So maybe you'll say, Rabbi Yehuda just means these things midrabanan. He doesn't literally mean it midrabanan, it just means midrabanan. That's fine. Bishtama eruv mezuzah. That's fine for Erev and Mezuzah. Ika l'mimer midrabanam. Okay, so I understand when it comes to you want to say it's chayv midrabanam to participate in the Erev Chaseros, chayv midrabanam to put up a Mezuzah. Okay, I could buy that. However, Ela Meiser, me Ika l'mimer midrabanam. But can you say that we're going to be mechayv him in Meiser midrabanam? But that poses a major kasha. What's the kasha? Dil ma'asi la'afrushe minachiyuv ala potter, u minapotter ala chiyuv. Oh! That could cause a real problem. What's the real problem on both sides? Literally translated, maybe you'll come to separate from that which is obligated on that which is exempt, or from that which is exempt on that which is obligated. I will say, so what does this mean? So understand something. That from like items, which means that technically speaking, I don't know what was your message about that, which means that what? I'm going to have to switch your guys' seats over here. So which means what? I will say, listen to this. If I have produce that is biblically obligated in tithing and produce that is exempt, so I can't tithe exempt produce for obligated produce. Because I will say, remember, you don't take shumas and maestros from every single meal you eat. Right? It's not the pshat that you sit down and you say, okay, before I ground my grain into flour to make bread, let me see what Trumas Maestros. What do? You know what your yield is. You know what your crop brings in. And you go in and you take Trumas Maestros. So what I could do is like this. This is for my crop, from the stuff that I bring into the sukkah. Only one problem. If you're telling me now that the crop that you bring into the sukkah is only what? Is only what? Chayiv midrabanan. Then what is going to end up happening is I'm going to take tithe from crop that is only chayiv midrabanan on the rest of my crop that is what? Chayiv midoraisa. You can't do that. You can't tithe rabbinically obligated or rabbinic. You can't tithe. Yeah, you can't tithe rabbinically obligated produce and exempt the rest of the biblical crop. You understand that? Because again, in order to be yotzei the trumas maestros of the crop, you have to tithe on like items. So if I have rabbinically obligated produce and biblically obligated produce, I can't tithe the biblical produce from the rabbinic produce, and vice versa as well. So therefore, the Gemara says, if you're telling me that the crop that I bring into the sukkah is only rabbinically obligated in trumas and maestros, just saying, you're going to create major, major problems because someone is inadvertently going to use that crop that came into the sukkah to tithe the other crop that they have that's biblically obligated as well. And then it'll turn out what? That they haven't properly tithed their produce. Elo, Amar Abayi. So therefore, Abayi says, you're right. We have to reanalyze this. So also, remember, what we have over here until now is, well, let's see, Abayi. Elo, Amar Abayi, B'shiva, So Abaye says, okay, so let's take a step back. Everyone agrees, which means both Rabbi Yehuda as well as the Tanakhama, as well as the Rabbanon, that during the seven days, that you're chayiv. Now, what does it mean? Look at Rashi. Amar Abaye, b'shiva yamim shel prisha, lo polig Rabbi Yehuda, devadei mechayiv dumya d'sukkah. So we'll say everybody agrees that during the 7 days of sequestration preparation, what do you need to do? You need to put a mezuzah on the lishkas parhedrin. So everybody's agreeing with that point, okay? The mechayiva kipli, when do they argue? B'sha'imos hashana. Oh, you know when they argue? What do you have to have the mezuzah up on the lishkas parhedrin during what? The other, 358, thank you. The other 358 days of the year, right? So that's the shayla. Rabbanan savri, gazrinan shar yemos hashana atusheva. The Rabbanan say yes. Because why? What are we concerned about? We'll say, if they're going to keep taking off and putting on the mezuzah, what's going to happen? If for 358 days of the year, the mezuzah is not there, chances are you're going to forget to put it up for the 7 days that you need. Therefore, essentially, the Rabbanon say, there's nothing lost in just leaving it there. So put it up for the 7 days of sequestration preparation and just leave it up for the rest of the year. Not because I don't need it for the rest of the year, but just leave it up there in order that I not forget to have it there for the days of Prisha. Look at Rashi. Actually, not yet. Rabbi Huda says, lo gazrinan. And Rabbi Huda says, no, we're not gozer. I'm not worried about that. Therefore, just put it up for the 7 days. After the 7 days, you can take it down. And then when the next year rolls around, you'll put it back up. Take a look at Rashi. Kipli yivushay mos hashana. Rabbanan savri gazrinan shay mos hashana atu shiva. The rabbis hold that we want you to keep the mezuzah up for the rest of the year, lest you come to forget to put it up for the 7 days. Rabbi Huda savra lo gazrinan ela lishkas parhedrin b'shayim os hashana haya la mezuzah kedei shetei muhsekes techo yodeh kebeis dira gimura shelo yomru ala koyim b'shevis meprisha beis asurin chavosh. Now we'll say, here's what's interesting according to Rashi. Rashi's going to say that lemaisa, according to Rabbi Huda would still agree that you leave it up for the rest of the year also. So we'll say, what's interesting over here is, according to Rashi's understanding of this, both Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanon, Lemaisa, paskin the same way, which is what? You really only need it up for the 7 days, but what? You'll keep it up for the rest of the year. But their reasoning differs. According to the Rabbanon, we keep it up for the rest of the year. Why? Because Lemaisa, we're afraid if you take it then, you're going to end up forgetting to put it back up for the 7 days. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we keep it up for the rest of the year. Why? In order that it look like to the general populace that this is a domicile and not a jail cell. It's not really a domicile. Why is it not really a home, according to Rabbi Yehuda? According to Rabbi Yehuda, only something that you live in throughout the year is considered a home. So it's really not a home. But we want it to look like home because the alternative is it looks like a jail cell. And therefore, we leave up the mezuzah for the entire year. So we'll say, according to Abaye's approach, everybody seems to be agreeing that Lemaisa, you put it up and you leave it up. They just differ on the reasoning. Amalei Rava says, one second. V'hasukas achag b'chag katani. But one second. There is the case of sukkah. Right? What's the case? Look at Rashi. Upachi rabbanon. Ama b'shiva nami ikalaman depata. So we'll say, but here's what's interesting. Because to a certain degree, it would appear that the lishkas parhedron somewhat resembles a sukkah. Just like the sukkah is a temporary dwelling. And again, in the case of the sukkah, what did the Rabbanon say? The Rabbanon said that you don't have to go out and put up a mezuzah there. So all Rabbi is saying over here is, it seems strange that there'd be a machlokes by sukkah, and yet no machlokes by lishkas parhedrin, but at the end of the day, they are quite similar in character. To which the Gemara says, Elo Amar Rava, b'shar yemos hashana, Kuli amalo pligi diptura. So Rava changes this around. And Rava says, everyone agrees that during the rest of the year, the lishkas parhedrin is potter. During the rest of the year, when obviously nobody's living there, everyone agrees that the lishkas parhedrin does not need a mezuzah. Ki pligi, when do they argue? Bishiva u besukah. Excuse me. When do they argue? During the 7 days of sequestration preparation. Look at Rashi. Ki pligi b'shiva, bein belishka, bein besuka. So when do they argue? Ki pligi b'shiva, besuka time aluchud, belishka time aluchud. Now, boss, I see. Here we go. So now, boss, say in Rava's model, everyone agrees. In Abaye's model, it was much easier. Why? Because everyone agrees that you need it during the seven, and everybody agrees that what? You leave it up throughout the year. In Rava's model, everyone agrees that during the year, The Lishka is Potter, and the Machlokes is during the 7-day sequestration preparation. So now, according to Rav, you have a Machlokes by Lishkas Parhetrin, and you have Machlokes by Sukkah. But says Rava, Sukkah time of Luchot, excuse me, Sukkah time of Luchot, the Lishka time of Luchot. But Rabbo said, despite the fact that the Rabbanan argue by the Lishkas Parhetrin, and they argue by Sukkah, it's not the same Machlokes. It's two different Machlokesim. Sukkah time of Luchot, let's analyze Sukkah first. What happens by Sukkah? Rabbi Huda Latame, Rabbi Huda goes according to his logic. He says, Damar, Sukkah, Diras Keva Ba'inan. Rabbi Huda is of the opinion that for a Sukkah, you need a permanent structure. This is Rabbi Huda in Sukkah. You need a permanent structure, and therefore, Umechayva B'mezuzah. And therefore, according to Rabbi Huda, because you need a permanent structure, part of the halachic definition of a permanent structure is what? Mezuzah. On the other hand, the rabbis say, on the other hand, the rabbis hold that a sukkah is a diras arai, is a temporary dwelling, and therefore what? And therefore it does not require mezuzah. The lish shabbos say, so that's the machlokis Rabbi Huda and the Rabbanan by sukkah. A fundamental machlokis as to the definition of sukkah. Rabbi Huda says sukkah is diras keva, permanent dwelling, and therefore requires mezuzah. Rabbanan diras arai, and therefore does not require mezuzah. Fundamental machlokis on the halachic definition of sukkah. The Lishka time of Luchot, but the Machlokes by the Lishkas Parhetrin is a separate Machlokes. Rabbanan Savri Dira Bal Karcha Shma Dira. Bosai, listen to this. The rabbis hold that a Dira Bal Karcha, what's Dira Bal Karcha? A forest dwelling is considered to be, meaning also remember, we don't ask the Kohen Gadol if he wants to come with, right? We take him. We're getting into this more, but it's clear that part of this, there is a certain compulsion. Again, they're not dragging him out of his house, but the pshat is, this is a process that we impose upon him. This is not voluntary, this is necessary in order to do the avoda. So I will say, so Rabbi Yehuda holds, Rabbanu holds, that Dira Bar Karcha, a residence, A forest domicile is not called the domicile. That's not called dira. The halachic definition of a bayis is what Rabbo say, is a place where you live willingly, by your own volition. But a place where you are forced to live is not called your home. And if it's not called your home, then what? Then it's not chayev in mezuzah. Lo shma dira. Rabbi Huda says, dira bal karcha. Excuse me, I lost the place over here. The Rabbanan say that a Dira Bar Karcha is called a Dira. It's called a home. And therefore, according to the Rabbanan, you will put a mezuzah on the Lishkas Parhetrin. Again, only when? During the 7 days. Rabbi Huda Savar, Dira Bar Karcha lo shma Dira. And Rabbi Huda holds that no, a Dira, a place we have to live against your will, is not called a Dira. If it's not called Dira, then Rabbi Huda, why do you put a mezuzah on it? And the rabbis came along and say you should put a mezuzah on it. Why? In order that people not say that the Kohen Gadol is incarcerated in jail, even though he kind of is, right? So we'll say, listen to this. So this is really fascinating. So what comes out, and we're not going to resolve this machlokes. We're going to leave this machlokes today. So what we have is a fundamental machlokes in Abaye and Rava as to how to understand machlokes between Rabbi Huda and Rabbanan. In Abaye's model is much simpler. In Abaye's model, pretty much everyone agrees that what you put up a mezuzah for on Lishkas Parhetrin. Why? Because in Abaye's model, everybody agrees that it's a domicile. Everybody agrees that for that 7 days, it's a bona fide domicile. What about the rest of the year? There's nothing lost in leaving it up. And according to the Rabbanon, according to Rabbi Huda, why do you go ahead and leave it up? Again, for this chashash. This whole Rabbi Huda is the same threat. Rabbi Huda's concern is because right, Rabbi Huda is not gozer, right, Rabbi Huda, correct, that, I'm sorry, same idea, Rabbi Huda says we leave it up through the rest of the year in order to reinforce the idea that Lishkas Parhetrin is not a jail. So if people see the mezuzah up throughout the year, then they'll actually believe that it's not really a jail. According to Rava says, no, they're having a fundamentally different machlokes. Everybody agrees that during the year, you don't need a mezuzah there on Lishkas Parhetrin. What's the machlokes, Rabbi Huda and the Rabbanan? Is during the actual 7 days themselves. Do you need a mezuzah or not? And by the way, there's two machlokes in Rabbi Huda and the Rabbanan, both by Lishkas Parhetrin and by mezuzah. And there are two, excuse me, and by sukkah. And there are two different machloksim. By sukkah, because remember, Rabbi Huda paskins that by sukkah you need a mezuzah. The Rabbanan say you don't. What's the machlokas there? Is sukkah diras arai or diras keva? Rabbi Huda says sukkah is diras keva. It has to be a permanent structure, and therefore the walls we're talking about, and therefore requires a mezuzah. Rabbanan, it's diras arai, and therefore has no mezuzah. That's sukkah. So Rabbi says, Rabbi now says, now take sukkah off the table, because sukkah has nothing to do with lishkas farhedron. Sukkah is its own machlokas. But now they machlokes or lishkas parhedron. What's the machlokes? The machlokes is the status of a dira bal karcho. What is the status of a domicile in which you are forced to live against your will? The Rabbanan say, diras bal karcho is what? It's called the dira. And therefore what? According to the Rabbanan, you have to have mezuzah. For how long? For how long? 7 days. 7 days. Remember, in Abaye's model, everyone agrees that you don't need it past the 7 days. The machlokas is only in the 7 days themselves. So Rabbanan will say you have to have it there during the 7 days. Why? Dira bal karcha shma dira. A dira against your will is still called a dira. Rabbi Yehuda says, no. A dira bal karcha, home is where you want to be, not where you have to be. Therefore, it says Rabbi Yehuda, although some might contest that also. Right? So Rabbi Yehuda says that lemaisa. And if you dira bal karcha is not shma dira, is not called a damasa, and therefore it doesn't need a mezuzah. But, says Rabbi Huda, we're going to put a mezuzah there anyway. Why? Why? So that people should not say that the Kohen Gadol is incarcerated. So Rabbi say, in Rava's model, again, you still have Rabbi Huda and the Rabbanan agreeing at the end of the day that you have to put a mezuzah on the Lishkas Parhedron for the 7 days, but differing on their reasons. According to the Rabbanan, it's a chiyuv midaraisa. Why? Because dira bal karcha shma dira, and according to Rabbi Huda, it's a chiyuv d'rabbanan, so that people should not think it's a jail cell. We'll leave off with this machlokes today. We'll mirtz Hashem resolve it tomorrow.
You mentioned earlier that when Rabbi Huda saved